Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, you know that I didn't do a very good job.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Gil. You're going to have to tape this first segment for me because I didn't get my paperwork opened in time.
My pleasure, sir.
All righty. Thank you, Gil. Gil's the one that saved me from all kinds of trouble. All kinds of trouble, I might add. So it's a, he calls me, and it's not his fault, calls me at 10. I'm lubing the doors on my truck. I forgot. I thought it was 9. So anyway, we are on the air. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. I got a couple things I wanted to read real quick. Here's something that just really makes this whole thing worthwhile. It makes the show and everything absolutely worthwhile in really every way. So it's a pleasure for me because this is a win. This is flat out a win. Mark, once again, I have to thank you for your help. Here's what it was. The lady had her car into one of my shops. And they did some work, and there was a problem. And so she said to me, so she called me and let me know. I called the shop. I says, let's talk about this. I'm going to have her come back in. The shop says, oh, no, we need to have her come back in. We're good. We're good. And I said, okay, well, that's good because that's what we need to do. So we bring the lady back in, and the end of the story is this. After I took the car back to 25th Street Auto because that's who it was, and they replaced the power steering hose, and my 2000 Lincoln is now perfect. There's no whine. There's no moan. Thankfully, there is someone to help an old lady that could trust, who only could trust her instincts, not her car knowledge, and you supplied it, and what it took to get the problem solved. She's talking about 25th Street Auto, Billy. She's talking about, even Billy and I talked about this, and he goes, I said, do you have any idea what the heck caused this? And he says, no. He says, we just had to replace some parts that we had put on. We didn't know what the problem was, but by goodness, this fixed it. So he says it was great. And she was a nice lady. She didn't yell at us. She didn't use bad words. I said, well, that is just wonderful, especially the part about the bad words. And I don't know about the old lady part, but certainly the bad words might be something that would create a problem. So nevertheless, it's important to know that that's what we're here for. It's important to know that that's what we can do. It's important to know that's what we're willing to do. So if you have a problem with one of my shops, all you have to do is give us a call. Let us know what's going on. We're happy to help you. And what's really important is that we work together to get you all fixed up. Gil, you won't believe this. The cord that goes into my power supply for my Comrex just shorted. There's flames all over. And I'm working on battery power right now. So hopefully we'll make it to the end of the show.
Okay.
How much worse can it get? So anyway, congratulations to Billy over at 25th Street Auto. All of us have this, including me. We all have problems. Now, the way she did such a magnificent job in talking about what happened and what was going on. And Billy and I had talked about it, and we talked about that it sounds like and looks like that we're sucking air into the power steering system, which could foam the fluid, which would cause the whine and the moaning. So we talked about that, and Billy says, this is what I think I want to do. And I said, okay, well, you're seeing the car in front of you, not me. So he says, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So obviously he fixed it. So I'm really grateful for Billy at 25th Street Auto because he stepped up when he needed to. And he didn't do that on purpose. It's just the luck of the draw. Either the hose had a leak where we were sucking air, or the steering box had a leak where it was, as the fluid went through to give her power steering, it was pulling air in at the same time. We don't know. And you would think that if there was a problem with an air leak, that there would be a leak. But you see, there's two portions of these systems. We have the suck and the push. And so on the suck side, you're supposed to suck fluid, and then you're supposed to put it into some kind of a compressor and force it out with pressure. In the case on the suction side, we'll suck air. On the pressure side, we'll leak fluid. So that's kind of an important consideration with respect to diagnosing a car. And I think that's happened to me once in all my years from 79 when I started. And that's what got us to the foaming fluid part, is that I have some more good news. Phoenix Body Works, I'm going to read from you. We've done this before, and we did it again. And here's what's important to them. We're 100% perfect across the board with USAA insurance on CSI. We all live and die by CSI. All of us do. We all revel at the 5-star ratings, and then we all just shake our heads and know we're in for a problem when we get a 1-star rating. So we're real interested in making customers happy. And with today's media, it's really easy for the customer to raise a stink. So hopefully we catch that early and we make the customer happy early before it gets to be something that's really ugly. And most people, if they give you a 1-star review, typically if you take care of them, not most, some people, you take care of them, they're still mad at you. And so you can't do anything about it as a business owner. But one thing we do like about all of this is that we know that the social media places understand that sometimes that happens. They don't necessarily work with this, but by the same token, it's something that's kind of important to them as well as us. So 602-508-0960. I'm proud of Phoenix Body Works. They do good work. And when you get 100% customer happiness from a shop, it's really important because the insurance company is between you and your customer. And the insurance company doesn't want to be dealing with these kinds of things on a regular basis. So as a result of that, it's a win-win for us. And who might be on the phone, Gil?
That would be Brian.
Brian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mark. I've got a 07 Hyundai Entourage van, 82,000 miles, and on startup, only first thing in the morning, I'm getting what I call a lifter noise, a rattle, and it's very, small amount, usually, and the vehicle sat 10 days, and I went out and started it. And it scared me. It rattled, like 3 seconds or so. So I'm wondering if I've got bad lifters or what your opinion might be on that.
Well, I can tell you that I don't know if it's 50-50. I don't know if it's 60-40 or 70-30. But exhaust leaks cause exactly the same kind of noise. It's even difficult mm-hmm. for guys like me to tell the difference between a rattle of a lifter or a rocker and an exhaust. What you said, though, kind of, I'm going to think out loud here. You said that the noise lasts for what? 3 seconds, you said? 5 seconds?
Well, at the worst, 3 to 5 seconds the one time that it sat for many days. It does sit quite a bit, and it's never done that on that duration of a downtime. And but almost every time you start a cold engine, I'm getting a root, and it's not severe
okay.
on that end.
Okay, I'm pretty sure, I'd like to open up the oil cap and look inside to see if there's a bunch of sludge or not. And mm-hmm. you're not out of whack because you said it's an 07, 13 years old, 82,000 miles. It's not like you're driving the wheels off of it either. So
no.
we're kind of in the middle there. I would want to listen to it. I'd want it for a couple of mornings so that I can listen to it. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to blow smoke up the tailpipe. Now, I know that sounds funny, but I'm talking literally. I have a machine, so does a lot of other shops. We're going to blow smoke up the tailpipe. If I have an exhaust leak first thing in the morning, I will see the smoke coming from the exhaust
mm-hmm.
leak. So that's the first thing I'm going to do. The second thing I'm going to do is have a couple of guys with a piece of heater hose or stethoscopes, and they're going to be on either side of the motor, and they're going to be touching different things. They're going to be touching with their hand, and they're going to be listening. So we're going to try to find out if it's from the motor, front of the motor or the back. I don't know if that has a valve adjustment time frame, but look in your owner's manual to see if it says adjust the valves. And that would be the time to pull the valve cover. Is it a four-cylinder or a V6?
I think it's a 3.8 V6.
Okay. So we need to find which side it's on. And once we find which side it's on, then we should be able to pop the valve cover if there's an adjustment. But if there's nothing in your owner's manual that says about valve adjustments, then it's going to be something different. You can also do this if you wanted to. We need to go through some steps first before we start taking the motor apart and replacing lifters. That's not
right.
So I'd say that you do an oil change when the motor's real warm, and then 3,000 miles you take a sample on the oil and send it in, and then 3,000 more you take a sample of the oil and send it in. That gives us, do we have a growth of anything abnormal in the engine oil? It's real cheap to do, and it's real good to have that. So all we're doing is looking for an increase. So if we come out and the number is 2 on metal, and it's still 2, and it's still 2, and it's still 2, I'm not real worried about that. But if it's 2 and then it goes to 20 and then it goes to 40, then I am worried about it. So what part of town do you live in?
Well, this van is in Apache Junction. That's a family home, and there's a Hyundai dealer there that's had very little repair done. It's needed very little repair, and I've had it there, and I'm thinking about taking it there, but I'm not adverse to taking it to your shop, too.
No. I want you to take it there. I just want you to all shops. Focus. Mm-hmm. Don't call me back and tell me I need a tire rotation and an injector flush. I don't want any of that. I want you to focus on this noise. That's all.
Yes.
And then they call you and they say, this is what it is. And you say, okay, what I understand is you're going to do this work not to exceed this. And you're going to get rid of my morning noise. People do that to me and I'm happy. We're happy.
Right.
Because that's the way we're supposed to be. So that's my advice to you is take it in now. Maybe they've seen this before. Maybe this is a known pattern. And if they do, then maybe Hyundai, are you the original owner of the car?
Yes.
Okay, that's really good, too. So maybe Hyundai will financially participate in this repair, but you won't know till you get
there. I was curious about that myself. It'd be a possibility, probably. But
you won't know till you – well, first of all, we have to find out what it is, and then we'll know.
Yeah.
So we'll go from there.
Well, it's had synthetic oil, 530 in it for probably 15,000 miles, 2 changes, and I know I can go longer on it. I'm going to this time, but it's had all of its oil changes. Any car we've ever owned has always been maintained.
All right. Well, I need to touch base on that. So you stay there, and I want to talk about oil changes, and I want to take issue with a couple of things you just said. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we have a couple of callers, but I have to do a little bit of business, and then I'm going to go back to Brian, and we also have David and Dennis there. Thompson's Auto Repairs in Mesa have been around since 1970. I've known the Thompson family since the early 70s. They've been around a long time because they're worth it. They're honest. They're dependable. The bad guys don't last long. They move around a lot. The Thompsons have been in Mesa since Jesus was a baby. So you can go to Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street just east of Stapley because you know that they're going to be around when you're going to need them. So that's kind of an important consideration for me, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. And, Brian, I want you, because you're going so few miles, I want you to consider doing an oil change at 10,000, and I think that's once a year for you, based on your mileage, your 07, blah, blah, blah. And I'd like you to do it in April, which is before summer, so you go through the summer with fresh oil. And this thing has nothing to do with your oil, this clatter in your engine first thing in the morning. You can put peanut butter in it, or you could put sewing machine oil in it. You're still going to have that noise. So, and in your case, like I said, you got a 13-year-old car with 82,000 miles on it. Once a year in April, that's what I'd tell you. If you were my dad, If I told my brothers that, they'd argue with me, and one of them's a banker and one of them's a cop, so what the heck, I don't care. Anyway, Brian, good luck to you. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2008 Toyota Camry with 150,000 miles on it. It's my girlfriend's car, and when you're doing about 70, 75 on the highway and you hit the brakes or you kind of brake a little bit firm, there's a little bit of a shimmy. What are the possibilities that could cause that?
There's a warped rotor or a bad wheel bearing. What we've got is the record player, which is the rotors, have to run true. Now, you've put a record on a record player because you sound like you're a little bit, you're old like me, not old like me, and you put it on there, and you can see that the record's got a little bit of whoppa, whoppa, whoppa to it. And so it doesn't sit perfectly flat on the phonograph table. That's what your rotors look like. And so a wheel bearing is attached firmly to the rotor. And so if there's a wheel bearing going up and down and it's bad, then that will cause it. But I listened carefully to you, and you didn't say a doggone thing about when I turn a sweeping right on the freeway or sweeping left, it goes, yeah, 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 yeah. That's a bad wheel bearing.
No, it doesn't do that.
Okay. So in your case, I would probably have a tire rotation done, and I would have them check my front brakes. And if I had no pads, or the pads were down to a, hey, we need to change these, then the rotors...
The pads were good. I kind of did a quick check on it,
uh-huh.
But I didn't want to take both of the rotors off and put it on jacks and then take them to the AutoZone or Checker O'Reilly's to have them through. I just did a quick check a few days ago.
I'm not, okay, if you're going to do that, then the rotor sits against the hub. It slides off the studs. Are you following me so far?
Yes.
Behind the rotor, we have to make sure that surface is absolutely spotless. There can't be any dirt or rust. Where the back of the rotor hits the hub, we have to make sure that's perfect as well.
And that's one thing I checked, too.
Okay. All right, then cut the rotors. Cut the rotors.
Okay.
Okay, good luck to you, David. Dennis, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a 2003 Dodge one-ton pickup truck. It's got the diesel in it.
Okay.
A few years it's been funny if I leave it around for 5 or 6 days and not running it, the battery is real low. And on the last time I started looking at it, I found out that when I took the ground lead off. When it was turned off, nothing on, no doors open, anything. When I pulled it away, I saw a slight arc on the ground lead. You know, I mean, that it could be positive ground, but it was the ground lead that I saw a little bit of a spark when everything was off. So there was nothing in the vehicle running, and it was drawing current.
Okay.
Okay? I put a meter, an amp meter in between the ground and the battery. And it was drawing about 1 amp. So what it was doing is it was killing a battery in 4 to 5 days.
Okay. Well, we have a keep alive memory in the computer, so we are going to use a little bit of electricity. Did you use an inline amp meter?
Inline amp meter, yes.
Okay, so you have two needle points, and you hooked one to the negative terminal. By the way, it doesn't make any difference if it's negative or positive, so you hooked one to the terminal and one to the cable. Okay. All right, and you zeroed it out, and you're absolutely sure there's 1 amp.
Yes.
Okay.
It was about 1.1 amps or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. This isn't going to be tough, but if you want to go buy an inductive amp probe, we need to disconnect and reset everything. But we also need an inductive amp probe so we can wrap the lead or the cable, and we can go around and start popping fuses. And also one of the first things you want to do is you want to disconnect the alternator. So this is going to be something you're going to have to hunt down.
Yeah, I can hunt. I have a mechanic. I can get to hunt that down. I don't know how long that's been doing that. It was a commonly used everyday truck for many years, and then it started laying around. Years ago, I took the second battery out of it because, like most double battery systems, if one goes bad, it drags the other one down. So we took that other battery out, and we just taped up the leads on the other side, you know, where the battery was. I'm wondering if something we did there had any effect on that.
No.
I know there's some electronics involved.
No,
in,
no.
In turning
no.
the relays.
No.
No, none at all.
No, it's nothing. Okay. So none of that makes any difference to me. None of that.
Okay,
so
fine.
The fact of the matter is that there's a procedure. I think what I would do is I'd probably call the garage and say, hey, would you... I don't know that one amp is that bad, but I don't know. If it were me, I'd take the battery and I'd have it charged, and I'd make sure that it was in the truck, that when I hit the starter, it didn't drop below 9.6. Then I'd let it sit there with the cable off, and I'd take a voltmeter reading every day for as long as I could take it. I mean, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days, and I wouldn't want any degradation of it. Because you're blaming it on the one amp, and it could be the alternator drawing the amp. It could be that the keep alive memories drawing the amp, or it actually could be a draw someplace where there's a light at the bottom of the door that's on, which calls more than one amp. So I don't really know where we're getting one amp. I'm a little concerned about that, so that's why I think you should test the battery first. And you can do that because you have the proper equipment. All the other questions about what this and what that will be answered once you find out it's normal, or you find the battery's bad, or you find out where the short's at. That's what has to happen. Okay. So if you have inductive amp probe, then
one
you're
minute.
On your way. You're going to take the fuse out, and you're going to build a little jumper on it, and then you're going to take your inductive amp probe, and you're going to go around the jumper, and you're going to do that to every one of the fuses and every one of the relays. So that's kind of how it happens. 602-508-0960, if you have a call, 602-508-0960. And I'll tell you, next segment, that Mark had trouble with his Dodge truck. And in the mornings, it was 12 degrees in the mountains this morning. And in the mornings, yesterday morning too, I went out there, put my key in, started my truck up. It's a diesel. And I headed down to the valley, and it ran terrible. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I've had this problem before, so I decided to attack it. So I'll tell you what I've been doing, and I've made some progress. I think I can explain it, but we'll see. 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. Every day, every Saturday from 10 to noon, I'm here.
Hour,
10 o'clock, Mark Salem here, every Saturday, 10 to 12. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the Valley rebuilding transmissions since 1968. You don't rebuild transmissions since 1968 unless you know what you're doing. You'd have been out of business about a year or less later, just like all the other people that have decided transmissions were a good idea. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, great place to go. If you have something that you need somebody to test drive or look at, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Doug, you're up. What can I do for you?
Hi. Ad you just had is apropos. Mine has to do with the tranny. I have a Ford F-150 2004. It's an automatic, of course, and I stick it in drive, and it works fine 1, 2, 3 gears, and then on the fourth gear, which is what I believe they call overdrive, there is no gear, so I have to back off, and it clunks back into third gear, and it works just fine. If I press the button on the end of the shifter, then I that won't happen because it only goes to third gear then,
okay.
As you know. And I'm wondering, is it a harness, which I've heard about, or is it just something else that might cause that?
Well, we got to get our terminology right.
Thank you.
You could have an overdrive and a lockup. So we go into fourth gear, and then we lock the converter so we have direct drive. The real question is which one's missing? It's not likely you're missing third. It's more likely that you're going into overdrive, and then you're missing lockup. So this just needs a test drive. You can also, as you're going down the road, you can also gently apply the brake, not enough to slow the vehicle down, enough to shine the brake lights. That typically will disengage the converter. So that's the first thing that happens when you hit, because we're direct drive. The motor is tied to the differential, period. We're direct drive. So when we hit the brake, the first thing the computer's got to do is cancel the lockup. So, I would just have somebody drive this. And as far as the harness is concerned, it's a really bad idea to work on your car based on what the guys on the internet say. Because unless they're skilled and unless they know right questions to ask, then, there's all kinds of bad information on the internet. We regularly laugh. In the lunchroom, the guys will bring stuff that they've seen and stuff that just is so wrong. And then the question is why did it happen? And the answer is well, we'll tell you once we find what it is. And it's not important for us to look at the question, which comes at the end of the process. So what part of town do you, first of all, do you have a garage you like?
It's a guy named Pete. He's over on Main Street near Valver.
Just have him drive it.
I will. I called him. He said, 9 out of 10. That's what he said. Usually the entire tranny, but it works so well if I push the button and it works on first, second, and what I think is third gear. But you're saying lockup, and I don't know what that is referring to, but I don't have to know.
Third gear. You're driving your 10-speed bike, and when you go into 10th gear, I'm going to lock it up, so I'm going to hook your feet to the rear tire, period. So when we lock the converter, we are locking the engine to the transmission. And we use the converter, because the engine, half the converter spinning with the engine, and the other half spinning with the rear tires. So when we lock that up, then there's no slip. So, I just don't know.
I don't know
the answer. Yeah. We need somebody to drive it, and then we'll have at least which area to go in. And it could be a wire harness. If something happened, there could be a wire harness problem.
There's more to it than I always, guys like me, they simplify. Well, it works great in 1, 2, 3. I guess it's something. Just getting into fourth, that's bad, and I don't have a clue.
All right. Good luck to you. And you know what? Why don't you email me when you get done and tell me what it is so I can learn as well. Mark@MarkSalem.com, Mark@MarkSalem.com. And Dennis, I called a friend of mine. I have a lot of shop owners that are friends of mine, believe it or not. And I said, hey, I got a diesel with a 1-amp draw. And he goes, oh, that's too much. And I said, okay, what are you thinking? He goes, I'm thinking milliamps. And I said, so 8, 9, days or something like that. Well, I'm not sure with the diesel. And I said, well, he's got one battery out, so we don't have all the reserve power that we would normally have. And he says, well, we got to go after the battery, which is what I told you. So I'm going to change my mind. Maybe 1 amp is a little bit big, but I'd sure do the battery first, and I'd disconnect the alternator, see if the amp went away. Because one of the diode is a one-way electrical device, and if one of the diodes has popped, and here's what happens. When you pop the diode, this is what you do. I don't know if you've done this, but you can't take one of the battery cables off when it's running. And everybody does that to check the alternator. And when you do that, you typically damage the alternator. And usually it's a diode. So in the event that the cable gets dirty and you continue to drive it and you don't know the cables get dirty and the cable then loses its connection with the battery, you don't know that till the alternator light comes on. So those are all the moving parts. The diagnostics is not that tough. I got to take a break, but Tom, you stay right there because you're my next caller. Let me push some buttons here, and I know, Tom, I told you I'd take you, but I got a little business to take care of. My list of shops, I believe, is the very best list. I promise you that these guys are the best I can find. Now, there's some shops out there that are really, really good, and they don't want to be part of my best car repair shops, or for whatever reason. I don't begrudge them. That's okay. But Kurtz Automotive is up at I-17 in Bell. He's really good. They really do a good job in diagnostics, and there's nothing I've had on the radio in the last 6 years that's not something they couldn't track down and find. Like many of my shops, they're that good. So Kurtz is a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner. He's been around since 1987. He does gas and diesels, and if you have a weed eater, he'll take a look at that as well. Both domestic and foreigns, gas and diesel, he does it all. And he has ASE certified technicians. So, Kurtz Auto, he's at I-17 and Bell in the northeast corner. And, Tom, you have all my attention.
Hi, Mark. Been listening for a long time, and trust your opinion. So I'm actually calling kind of to get a second opinion. I've got a good mechanic. He works for one of the big shops. They've got them all over town. Begins with a G. Mm-hmm. And he's the number one mechanic in the line. So I trust him. He's ASE certified and et cetera. So I have a 2010 F-150.
Okay.
And my check engine light came on, and he plugged in and tested it, and he said, well, it's oxygen sensors. So he's ordered those up. We haven't put them in yet. And at the same time, we also noticed that there was a little tick in the engine. And I asked him about that, and he kind of smiled, and he said, well, he said, it's probably some lifter noise. He said, it doesn't really seem to be a big issue. And we went on about our business. And I haven't put the oxygen sensors in. My check engine light periodically comes on. I work a lot, so just tough getting in there. But anyway, I just wanted to get a second opinion from you. My truck runs great. It's got almost 137,000 miles on it.
Okay.
Had 20,000 on it when I bought it.
Okay.
And that's my story.
Okay. So he plugged in his machine, his scanner, and then he condemned the oxygen sensors. Is that kind of the short version?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Correct.
I'm not going to talk about him. I'm going to tell you, if one of my guys did that, I'd be really upset. First of all, only 3 of 10 oxygen sensors in my world are bad. You see, the oxygen sensor tells the computer how much oxygen there is. If the oxygen is low, that means there's a heck of a lot of fuel. If you have a vacuum leak, it'll cause an oxygen sensor. If your fuel filter's plugged up, it'll cause an oxygen sensor. There's lots of causes for oxygen sensors. You can't just plug your scanner in and look at a code and say, oh, it's oxygen sensors. That doesn't work. Is the oxygen sensor defective, or is it the messenger? And I'm suggesting that 3 out of 10 times that we find, it's actually the problem, and the rest of the times it's a messenger. So I'm uncomfortable with the short diagnostics, but I'm willing to say that maybe he did some other work that you didn't see or whatever, but there's just a lot more to do. Here's the deal. We need to go in and see if the oxygen sensor can see its range, okay, 1 to 5. This is just for radio because you can't see me moving my hands. 1 to 5. 1 is lean and 5 is rich. And that's what the oxygen sensor says. It says, hey, hey, it's real lean. Give me more fuel. Give me more fuel. And then on the other end, at 5, it goes, hey, hey, you're showering me in gasoline. Turn that nozzle down. So in between. In order to test that thing, you have to create a lean condition. So you pull the vacuum line off the booster. And it better go to 1 real fast. Then you take some carburetor spray and you spray down the intake of this thing. And it better go to 5 fast, because you're creating a lean condition and you're checking, and a rich condition, and you're checking the range of the O2 sensor. So you ask me for my opinion. I think you should get a second one. My fear is that you'll put $200 or $300 or $400 worth of O2 sensors in it. They'll clear the code and the light will come on. Then, and I'm not talking about your shop. This is what happens in my world at a lot of places. So, 2 oxygen sensors, $300, $400, sometimes $500 if they're heated. Then they clear the code. Everything's fine for a month or whatever. And then the code comes back and you go in, and then it's altogether something different. So, I'm just telling you, I think I'd get a second opinion. I'm sorry.
What about the little engine tick that I've got that he doesn't seem too concerned about?
Well, I think that that's something that you should look at. I'd like to put a stethoscope on it. I'd like to know if it's there in the morning first thing. I'd like to know what weight of oil you're using. I'd like to know which side of the engine the tick is coming from. I'd like to know how long in the morning it's there before it goes away, if it goes away. And if it doesn't, does it get louder when the engine's cold or louder when the engine's hot? Those are all questions. We can't possibly hone in on the problem until we know the answers to most or all of those questions. So I'm that technician that works for me that did that to you, Mark Salem wouldn't be happy with him. Unless,
okay,
of course, his idea was is that let's go look at the tick. Let's go see if we can determine which side it's on. Maybe we pull a valve cover. Maybe we put our fingers on all the lifters. Oh, look at this one. Feels different. I can feel the click here. Oh, but this one and this one and this one and this one. Oh, they're fine. Now we got to find out if the camshaft's wearing. We got to find out if there's oil pressure to the lifter, and maybe not. Maybe we just adjust that rocker. So that's really how it's supposed to be. I'm sorry.
Because it pretty much ticks all the time, warm or cold. It's pretty much the same. It doesn't really change.
Okay. So it doesn't ever change intensities. It doesn't ever change, ever.
No, pretty much always okay. The same.
All right. Well, a vacuum or an exhaust leak ticks just like a lifter, but it's sensitive to a heat, and that's why I ask you that question. So if it stays the same intensity and it never changes, then obviously there's something up there that's ticking. The question is do we pull the valve cover off and put a half a turn on the adjustment, or maybe on the stud to where the rocker sits, we put a half a turn, the noise goes away, we take the half a turn back, the noise is back. Maybe we go at quarter turn. No, I don't want to. I'm looking at the mileage. It's too old. I'm going to do a half a turn. Then you shut it off and you go drive it, make sure it doesn't backfire, and we're done. So that's kind of how it works. Anyway, thanks for calling. I appreciate that. And thank you. You gave me a lot of information other than this is what the internet said and this is what my next door neighbor said. You and I were be able to communicate, and I ask questions and you give me answers. That's the best way to handle car repair. Speaking of car repair and diagnostics, Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue in Indian School is one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. Him and Jeremy, which is Bob and Jeremy, those guys are just wizards. Just wizards. I'll tell you a real quick story. Somebody had an estimate for thousands of dollars on their BMW because it had water leaking out of the case behind the glove box, which is called the evaporator case. And they said they have to go in and take the evaporator out, and they have to do this and this and this, and it was thousands of dollars. The customer decided to get a second opinion and took it over to Harker's Auto. Now, let me explain. This device behind the glove box is called the evaporator, and it's what gets really cold, and then there's a fan behind it, and the fan blows across this little cold radiator, and that's how you get air conditioning. But it also sweats. So if the humidity's high, it sweats. Many of you have come out to your car and seen the wet spot on the blow. It's on the passenger side right by the windshield. That's the water that comes off your air conditioning. This is a true story. So they take a camera and go up the drain, which is about a 3-inch long rubber hose, and they can't see anything up there. So they take an air gun and they tape up all the dashboard vents, and they put an air gun in there and blow it. Now, Jeremy's underneath the car, and when Bob blows it, it blows this booger out of the hose and covers Jeremy in a really rancid amount of water. Now, Jeremy used bad words that I'm not going to tell you what they are, but they fixed the car with a little ingenuity, and they fixed the car and they fixed the water problem. And it's the reason why it was sweating water was because it was plugged. So there was water some getting in, but the inside of the evaporator was like a swimming pool. So that's Larry Harker's Auto. He does a good job. And then real quick, there's lots of other shops in town that are good, but I think my list really describes the very best ones. You can find it at marksalem.com. We were talking about Mark's truck. So this morning, 17 degrees, 12 or 17, I don't remember. Start up the truck. It runs bad. I go to the valley. This is yesterday morning. Go to the valley. Runs really bad all the way there. About an hour after it sat there, my wife took it, and she calls me, and she goes, truck's running fine. But I know this is cold related. So we came up last night, and I parked the truck, and this morning I went out, and I just turned the key on. Not start, just on, and walked away from it. I was gone 20 minutes. I came back, and I was going to have to run to Pine because my wife told me I had to haul this dresser there. So I started up, and I drive it. And you know what? Now, this has happened numerous times where it runs really bad after a cold start. It's fine. This morning, it was fine. It had all the power. It didn't have any mess. It didn't go da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da. Didn't do that. So I'm driving down the road, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, when it's down in the valley, it doesn't do that, so maybe cold has something to do with it. And I know when you turn the key to the on position, the computer has to gather data from everything. The temperature of the engine, the temperature outside, where your foot's at, are you in the start mode, how much vacuum, what altitude, what the barometric pressure is, what the humidity is, all of that stuff has to be gulped at once. So I'm thinking to myself, now, I also have some performance enhancements in there. So now I've got that whole thing over here. So this morning I decide
and I'm going to go with her this morning, and it's cold. So I go out and I just turn the key on, but not to start. I go in and finish my coffee and put the dogs away. I come back out. I start it up. I don't turn the key off. I just start it from where it's at. It ran great to Pine. Just great. So I'm thinking out loud, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe I'm going to try it again and again, because I think the computer is going through the programmer, which is the device that I'm not supposed to have in the truck, although it's out of warranty and I don't care. So it goes through there, and there's lots of data has scrap, and I'm thinking maybe I stick the key in there, and too fast, I just go to the start. I'm thinking that. So if that's the case, I'll know it for sure if when it's cold. Every time I turn the key on, go back in, finish my coffee, come back out. Now, the key is on, but the engine's not running. I want to make that distinction. I'm just waking everything up. So if that's the case, then I know. Then the next thing I'm going to do is unplug my programmer, which is the hot rod part of my truck. And so I'm going to unplug it for about a week and see if it is involved. And if I take it out and I can quick start it, just put the key in and go right to the start cranking, and I have no problems with cold weather, then I know what the problem is. But if it's not the problem, then really and truly the wide discrepancy of where the truck's been is an issue. Now, yesterday afternoon when I left Phoenix, it was probably 65 degrees sometime. I drove all the way up the mountain, so I went from 1,200 feet at 65 degrees all the way up to 5,000 feet. And it was cold this morning, it was cold last night. So I'm just wondering, is it using the same fuel map at 1,000 feet, 1,200 feet, and 5,000? And I know the answer is no. So I'm just kind of working on this problem with my truck, and that's the diagnostic process I would think most gray-haired guys would do. It's really a matter of what's different between starting it at 5,000 feet cold morning and starting it at 5,000 feet down at 1,200 feet. At 1,200 feet, I don't have the problem. But then again, down there, it might be, 32, 28, and up here it's 12 to 17. And there's a difference there on the fuel delivery. Another thing I need to find out is when it's missing, is it running lean or rich? So I'm probably going to take a can of propane. I'm going to run a hose into the air intake. And when it starts to go da-da-da-da, I'm going to open up and add a little bit more fuel and think to myself, if it's better, then it's a fuel delivery problem. But still, the computer opens and closes the fuel delivery. So is the computer not seeing the weather, not seeing the humidity, the barometric pressure? What? And that's what it's all about. Folks, I don't know if I'm going to fix this. And I don't really care. But the fact of the matter is, this is interesting to look in Mark's empty head. Now, my wife would tell you that there's nothing between my ears, and many of my friends would say that my head is completely empty. I do know a little bit about cars, but I'm not the best guy in town. I promise you that. There's other guys I respect in this town that are a lot smarter than this old guy. They just have more wider experience. They might have paint and body that I don't. They might have internal transmission operation that I don't have. But when it comes to air conditioning and performance and oxygen sensors, I can match up with the best of them. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. You have to pass all 8 tests, and you have to recertify every 5 years. That's not easy. There's not a lot of us out there. So ASE Master is the highest you can do, other than some other platinum one that I'll never get. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We have another hour of the car repair store. It's actually called Under the Hood with Mark Salem. But you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll help you out the very best we can. And we start off with year, make, and model, and then we talk about symptoms. That's the easiest way to get where we're at. It's not important unless I ask you about what you've done already, because clearly you still have the problem. And so we'll kind of just work our way around that. Let me tell you about a really good shop up in North Phoenix, and that's Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. I know he's honest. I know he's dependable. I know he knows right from wrong, and he has ASE certified technicians. So if you're up near Deer Valley, which he serves Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area. If you're up near Deer Valley, you're up near Deer Valley and I-17. He's on the northwest corner, and the name of it again is Action Auto Repair. Jerry, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. My question is more of a curiosity. On jump-starting a diesel, since you have two batteries, do you need two battery packs?
You know, I got to tell you something. I don't know. Not too long ago, I have a tractor with two batteries. And it's a diesel. And my son had given me this black box. And he said, this is the newest thing. And it's got all this high-performance stuff in it. I've used it before on motors that are not cold. And so I put it on, and I got them started. And a couple of them have been diesels, but they're four cylinders. And they're not like the 6.7 Dodge I'm got in. It's not like the M11 in my big truck, Cummins. So not too long ago, I left the dome light on in my big truck, and when I went out there, and so it has two giant Group 27s. These are big dogs. And so I got that thing, and I put it on there, and I thought, you know, I better let it sit for a little while. So I walked over to the barn, got my voltmeter, went back, and I just stuck it on there, and we were at 13 volts. So I thought, that's kind of cool. So I hit it, and it started. I can tell you that I have one of those little red ones that you hold in your hand, and it has a little bitty meter in the front, and it has two jumper cables on the side, or two cables with the clamps. It would have never started that big truck. Never in a million years. Okay. I don't know the name of it, but the answer to your question bluntly is you're probably going to need two different sources of power. I don't think you're going to, and if you've looked inside many of those jump boxes, we have a motorcycle battery in there. I mean, it looks just the same battery as I've got in my Goldwing. So It's not exactly something that's great, but this box that my son gave me is different. Now, if you want to call him, Salem Boys Auto, ask for Alan. I think it's pretty expensive, though. But you can at least talk to him and ask him some specifications where maybe you can get on the Internet and find something with this amp hour, with this voltage, so forth, and CCA, and then you could find something that matches this. So if in an exaggerated way, this $10,000 box you might be able to find for $200. Just an exaggerated.
Okay, thank you for the information.
Okay.
The question, Vinny, 1,000 amp peak, one of those little battery booster things, is that a decent amount of amperage?
1,000 amps?
It says 1,000 peak amps.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah, your starter's going to draw, depending on whether it's cold or hot, and the engine's cold or hot, it's going to draw 200 or 300 amps. And I'm trying to get in the middle of the low and the end.
Right.
So, that's... I'm surprised. Now, you know what you've done? I'm not going to like you today because I'm going to go into the barn and grab both of mine to see how they stack up about yours. and I don't know, but I'll tell you what. I'll share with you. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem, like the cigarette.com. Send me your email address, and I'll share you with the ones I've got. I know one of them I'm happy with, and the other is good for everything else. It's good for my lawnmower. It's good for my my motorcycles, but it's not going to start. I don't think it's going to start either one of my diesels. So, okay, Jerry, thank you very much. Mark@MarkSalem.com. And that was a question I've never had before. Never had before. When it comes to diagnostic, I hope that during this radio show you kind of understand that there is a process. And, folks, there's a lot of technicians out there that are as smart as me or even smarter. There's a lot of them. They're seasoned, they're younger, and they started right into fuel injection and automatic timing control and oxygen sensors, where us older guys started with the 55 Chevys with points and condenser and the 235 six-cylinder with no air conditioning and a PowerGlide three-speed transmission. So we started there. It's true that we have a better handle on the fundamentals, because we've gone through from really what it is, the Stone Age and the Dinosaur Age, to the Microsoft Age. That's really what me and my peers have gone through. No, it's not even true, because there's older cars than what we worked on, which is the 50s. That's what my age group was out there working on. But there's some older cars even before that. So I think our knowledge of the 50s and the 40s translates to the 10s and the Model Ts, but I'm not sure. I'm sure someone will let me know, but I'm not sure. But we do have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Daryl.
Daryl, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good. Hey, my wife's car is a 2012 Buick Enclave.
Okay.
Water pump went out on it, so I replaced that, which that went fine. I had to take off the right front wheel to get access to it, which I jacked it up and took the wheel off, blah, blah, blah. When I put it all back together, the front end was just kind of like bouncing. Instead of riding smooth, it was kind of like bouncing like your, like the shock absorbers didn't want to work anymore. It was really bizarre. I mean, my wife said, this isn't right. This feels like you're riding in a buckboard. And I don't understand what could have happened between just jacking the car up. And one guy told me that he thought that I had extended the shock absorber too far, and now it wasn't happy.
I don't agree with that because we have stops on the height and the drop. And I don't think by jacking the car up by the cradle, which is the frame underneath it, I don't think you're putting the shock absorber in a place that it's not been before. So, and if you pull the shock apart, you're usually going to have a big mess of oil. And if you pull the shock apart, I'm not quite sure. It's going to take some time to pump all the oil out of it, so I'm not quite sure this is going to be an immediate thing.
Yeah. The shocks look clean. They're not dripping oil.
Yeah. Can we go back to the tire and the wheel? I mean, you got the tire centered on the hub, and it's flush against. I know, but I've heard that before from my own technicians. Sure. I think what you should do is you should drive that, and tomorrow morning you guys go out on a deserted road, main neighborhood or whatever, and you stay close to the left front tire, and your wife drives, and then you're on the phone together, and then you watch to see what happens. And you've diagnosed it as the shock absorber. I'm not quite sure that there isn't other things that it could be. But here's what we need to see. If you're driving and you're watching the right front tire of this car, and she says that it's there, and you can't see it, then I'm not quite sure I agree with your diagnosis. Because if the shock absorber's bad, there's going to be a heck of a racket. It's going to be there all the time. And you're going to be able to see it.
So. Is there something on those 2012 Enclaves that they've got something electronic controlling how the front end responds?
No, and you're asking questions that can only be answered after we fix it, and I suggest to you that you don't want to redirect your shop that way. Don't have them start looking at technical service bulletins, campaigns, and recalls on your car, because you're going to spend $125 to $150 for the pleasure of that. And I would suggest that you just take them for a ride, insist on taking them for a ride, showing them what you're talking about, because when he fixes it, he damn well better go drive that to make sure the symptom's gone, because that's what repair's all about. So all your questions will be answered, but you just need to have somebody look at it.
Okay, thank you.
You betcha. Good luck to you. That was a good interchange. That was a good interchange, because I think we'll send him on the path. What I don't often get... Well, I don't get 90% of the time is feedback about, am I close? And I think I'm going to be most of the time I'm going to be close. But then again, sometimes I'm not. Okay, Gil, I'm ready.
All right, your next caller is Ken.
Ken, good morning.
Good morning. I have a couple of Chevys, a Chevy truck that's like a 07 and a Chevy Malibu, or a Monte Carlo that's 07.
Okay.
Both of them have engine lights on. On the Chevy, I mean, I replaced the canister.
Nope. We're not doing that. Give me the code, and let me ask questions.
It's an EP EVAP code.
Okay. And you can replace everything until you're dead, and chances of you finding that are slim.
I know. That's why I quit doing it.
Okay.
2 minutes.
This is pretty easy. You're going to feel really bad because you've already spent more money than most of us would charge you to diagnose it.
My friend has a garage, or an auto, and on these type of, he's selling his business. He got it from his dad. He's tired of working on cars, but it was a good place to work. I mean, good
okay,
buddy.
Okay, all right. Well, let's get past that. What did he say?
He sent me to the Larry Auto Electric on 35th Ave. Larry's.
Okay.
They're kind of expensive.
Did they fix the car? Let's just forget all this other stuff. Did they fix the car? That's
a
yes or no.
No, when they first took them there, they found it was a different problem. It was the battery was draining when the car was off. Okay, now I've got this engine light on, and I want to know where I could take it and not get raped.
Wait a minute. The engine light is at the end of your story?
That's what's happening now. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to confuse
you. All right. Well, all that front side, we're going to shove that away. What we got is you're driving down the road, you got a check engine light, or a check engine light on, and it's an EVAP code.
Yeah.
Is that what we got? Okay. All right.
Yes.
All right. We need all that other stuff. We set it aside. The evaporative code has to do with the evaporative system where we suck fumes off the fuel tank and send them forward. There's all kinds of things between the fuel tank and forward. There's all kinds of things. There's the canister. There's the purge valve. There's the vent on top of the tank. Most of the time we start with this is we introduce smoke to the system, a dense white smoke. We should not see the smoke anywhere. So he goes, hey, all you guys, come over here. We're doing an evap test. Plugs in the smoke. There's a guy by the right front headlight, the left front headlight, two guys underneath the hood, one guy underneath the gas tank. Pump it full of smoke, and the guy at the gas tank goes, it's mine. That's what happens. I can't tell you where the evap code is, and I can't tell you whether they were responsible for whatever, but I can tell you this. Once they find it and fix it, they can answer a lot of your questions. But we just have to do some work. You cannot fix an evap code unless you want to spend $500 guessing, and it's going to cost you a lot less to have somebody diagnose it and fix it. 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break and be right back. Minutes after 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, I need a caller.
Yes,
you can't come up with a caller for me?
Oh, Ken, the last caller.
Oh, okay.
Told me that he's in the area of Camelback and 16th Street, recommends from you, a shop for him to go to.
Oh, yeah, that's easy. That's easy. 16th Street, and I think it's South Indian School or somewhere around there, is Martin's Auto. It's a second-generation shop. Dennis Martin started that in a gas station, and I've known Dennis since 1973. His son Dave now runs the shop, and he's really, really good. He's really, really good. You just meet him, and you just got to know he's good. So this is not going to be a problem with Ken. He's gonna have no problem diagnosing it. Ken just answers his question, and he says, what about this? Does it vibrate if cold? Does it vibrate hot? I know this isn't what he's specifically talking about, but those are the kinds of questions we're typically going to ask. And then when he gets done talking to him and he asks for the checkout estimate, after he gets the estimate number, he says, Mark Salem said you couldn't fix a car if he spotted you, and that'll make him laugh, and then he'll send me my commission check of $1,000. And you can believe all of that, but the last sentence. Oh, God. Bill, good morning to you. What's up?
How you doing?
Good.
How you doing? Now you got a 07 Corolla, about 115,000 miles, and I got a starting problem in the last month or so. It seemed to, when I turned the key, it seemed to hesitate and then start. So yesterday I thought I'd just pay careful attention, and it started right up. It sounded good. I thought everything was fine. Shut the engine down and went in to start it again to go home, and nothing happened. No noise, no nothing, nothing.
All right.
Then I called AAA. They sent the jumper guy out, and he couldn't get anything either. So I had it towed. When I went out to get the key from the guy who towed it, he said, just for grins, I tried to start it, and it started. So I got a problem, and I don't know what it is.
Wow. So let me put that in short form. Intermittently, it drags the starter. Intermittently, it just clicks, and intermittently, it does nothing. What do you think, Mark? And, because I don't like guys in trucks that come out and put batteries in, okay? I don't like that. I was at the Safeway store. Just a minute.
Oh, okay.
I was at the Safeway store the other day, and some lady had a jump start problem, and some guy in a truck shows up, and I had already walked over there, and I already listened to it, and I knew it was a bad connection. And he put his fancy machine on there and condemned the battery, but you know what? He was going to fix it with a new battery because he was going to have to fix the connection. I just shook my head and walked away. I really regret that because I should have grabbed the old lady and pulled her aside and said, you know, let me fix it for you real quick. Do you have a garage around here? But I didn't because I didn't want to butt in. So in your particular case, you have two symptoms. You have a no crank, no start, no click, and then sometimes it drags the starter. I would just, that's all you need to say. Take it to a shop and have them do a battery test on it. You have to test it when it's bad. So you have to test it. Now, if you want to do it yourself, go get a voltmeter, hook it up to the battery intermittently, and if it draws the voltage down below 9.6, either the battery can't handle the load or the starter is drawn too much of a load, but 9.6 is the floor. I can't have any, it's not going to work below 9.6. I would really like you to lose a half a volt. So you're going at 12, and maybe you go to 11.5 to 11, and it cranks and starts. The clicking noise means that we either have low voltage, bad connection, bad battery, or the solenoid's not working. So if you want, get a hammer, and next time it click, click, clicks, hopefully somebody's there with you, just find the starter. You can find it by following the battery, positive battery cable. You'll see the starter and the solenoid. I want you to gently tap the solenoid and the starter with the hammer. Not enough to dent anything, just enough to tap, tap, tap. Then get in the car and see if it starts. If it does, then you probably put a starter solenoid. I don't think you should put a solenoid on. I think you should replace the both of them together. So that's the speech. And as far as the checkout is concerned, you can go to my website, marksalem.com, and go to FAQ 28, and I'll walk you through it. So it's called a no start or click or rrr and crank slow. They're all going to be talked about. And my website's going to show you how to do it with the headlights. Okay? You're going to watch the headlights, and the headlights will help you diagnose it. So good luck to you. Good luck to you. Folks, it's really, really important that we talk about the symptoms. That's why that front counter stuff is so important. Don't go to a shop where you walk in and say, does it start? Okay, thank you. Give me the keys. That's not in your best interest. Does it crank slow? Does it click? Does nothing happen? Those are important questions. We need to look at all of that. We need to know why you're saying that. Because the fact of the matter is that 50% of the time, it's not going to act up for us. And we didn't ask you, does it do it cold in the morning or hot? Does it do all the time cold, all the time hot, or is it intermittent? And when it clicks, do you hear anything other than the click? And is the click a real heavy click, or is it just a little click? That's what's all important. Okay, I got something else, and then I'm going to get the other caller. 40% of the shops out there right now are great shops. 60% of them do a good job at what they do. It's the middle. It's the middle. The guys that represent their skills levels are much higher than they are. The guys that would say, I'm not the right shop for you. If you brought your Maserati in, and every time you turn to a regular radio station on the FM side, and the trunk pops, I'm not going to work on that for you. I'm going to tell you I'm not the right guy. I've never seen that before, and you have a car that doesn't even represent 1% of the cars on the road. You are best served by somebody that works on this car all the time. That's what it sounds like. Another thing. They're giving free oil changes in a whole bunch of places now, and here's the deal. I'm going to give you free oil changes, but you need to come in every 3,000 miles. You need to be pretty particular about that. Okay, so I'm going to give you a free oil change. I didn't ask you if you have conventional, semi-synthetic, or synthetic. Conventional is changed at 3,000, semi-synthetic at 7,500, and synthetic at between 10 and 12, depending on the car. I'm not asking you that. Am I going to put a cheap oil in your car? Yeah. You're going to come in every 3,000 miles. That's okay, because cheap oil lasts 3,000 miles. But I'm going to get to sell you everything. I get to rotate your tires. I get to check your brakes. You know what? It's time for us to flush your cooling system. And last time you were in, we looked at the transmission fluid, and it's dirty. And you know what else you need? We need to go in there and flush your gas tank and flush your fuel injectors. It's called an RCO, a reoccurring sales opportunity. If anybody that's within the sound of my voice wants a free oil change every 3,000 miles, I'm raising my hand. because when you come in, we're going to act like them, and we're going to sell you and scare you. That's a bad idea. Pay for your oil changes. Find a good shop. I only have a minute, and so I can't really. Who's the next caller?
Tony.
Tony, I'm going to apologize because my long-winded dissertation and rant took up almost the whole last minute that I'm allowed to. And like we're right now 14, 15, and he wants me out in 45 seconds. And Gil uses bad words when I don't hit my marks. And there's only really two marks I got to hit exactly. That's exactly 30 minutes after the hour. And then at 58 minutes and 58 seconds, I got to be gone. So Gil, like I said, uses bad words when I don't hit my marks, 34, 35, 36. But, Tony, you're going to be my first caller, and I'll give you all the time you need as long as we stick to the kind of symptoms you're making model of the car. And, Gil, I'm 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Goodbye. I want to tell you something. Gil, go ahead. You're dying to tell him. Go ahead. Tell him.
You were into the break 10 seconds earlier than usual, Mark.
That's fine, Gil. That's fine. Thank you. Thank you for embarrassing me. Folks, I'm counting down the time. I'm supposed to be out at 30.00. 30 on the button. 30 minutes below at the bottom of the hour. And Gil says I ducked out at 10 seconds early. And I'm looking at my clock, and I did. And I was bragging to you guys about how good of a radio guy I am. And so I bail out early. Gil goes, you have another 10 seconds. Oh, God. Here's the good news. Let me tell you a little bit about radio. My first break is at 17. I can be 16, 17, 18. Heck, I've gone 19 sometimes. No one cares. That bottom of that hour at 30.00, I got to hit it. Then we go into a 40 break, and I can be flexible there. But then you get to the 58.50, 58 minutes after the hours and 50 seconds. Got to hit that one because they got all the commercials and all that other stuff till the top of the hour. So that's what my life is. And I'm sitting here. I'm trying to keep the dogs quiet. My wife is in the other room drinking herself silly. Gil's yelling in my ears, and I've got callers. And so you can understand that I am just frazzled beyond belief. But I can still tell you about Auto Dynamics in Sun City. Family owned and operated since 1982. Chuck Nide and his son Eric. I've known him for a long time. I've known Eric since he was a little boy. He now runs the operation. Chuck and I go back to 1968 in the gas station days. So if you're in Sun City, the only shop I can recommend, let me repeat, the only shop I can recommend is Auto Dynamics, and they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Tony, you're up. How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call, Mark.
You bet.
I got maybe a quick oil question. I'm an old gray-haired guy. I used to deal with a lot of diesels and small gas engines and FE engines.
Mm-hmm.
The question about oil is, what's your thoughts on using diesel-rated oil in a conventional gas engine? You know, Rotellos, Delvac.
Yeah. I don't think that's necessary. I don't know that that would be a problem other than diesel oils have additives to help control the soot, and the diesels don't run 220, 230, 240 on the temp gauge like we want gasoline cars to do. But I hear you talking about a brand. And
well, it doesn't matter. Like the 1540, say Rotella T,
okay.
I used to be in the equipment business, and I ran them in everything I own, Ford FEs, down to the small Onan engines, gas engines,
yeah.
Everything.
Today we're a little bit more particular because for a variety of reasons. The oils are made for a specific use, so we have a 020. My compressor, my air compressor up at the ranch, calls for a 30, but it won't start when it's 17 degrees below zero. It pops the breaker. So about 2 years ago, I put a 020 synthetic in there. Starts up for me every time. I'm not worried about wear on my air compressor. It's the same way with diesels. We got soot. We don't have the temperature we have with gas. But we make a 1540 and a 540 are predominantly diesel oils. But you can go to a 2040 or you can go to a 020. You can do a lot of things. But I agree with you. In the 70s and part of the 80s, our industry could put anything we wanted, and it really didn't make any difference. but we're worlds ahead of the 70s with carburetors and points into the 80s with electronic mixture controls on a stupid carburetor, and then into the 90s where we break into fuel injections for the first time. So to answer your question, in a pinch, I wouldn't have any problem putting a diesel oil in my lawnmower. I wouldn't have any problem putting a 1540 or a 540 into anything I own. But if I'm going to take it into the shop, I pretty much want to stick with the oil that the manufacturer called for. Will it hurt the motor? Probably not. Would it cause the motor to fail? No. So what's the benefit of not using an oil that makes me feel good? Not really nothing. There's no benefit. There's a little bit of a risk. That's all. And then keep in mind that Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron pretty much make all the base stock. So all the oils come from one of those guys. And everybody puts a drop of additive here and a drop of additive here in either a quart, a gallon, or a 50-gallon can. So you can imagine that if we put a drop of additive in a gallon can, that there's really not a lot in there. So thank you, Tony, for bringing up the oil question. It's diesel versus gas, and there is a difference today where in the old days we used 30 weight and everything, and then, of course, in the diesels we'd use something else. Gil, what did you say?
1 minute.
Oh, you're being smart now, aren't you? It's 1 minute. Well, first of all, let me tell you how bad my day's been. I helped my wife move some stuff today, and I came home, and Tommy was here working on the barn, and he's helping me paint it, and I ran the dogs, and then I came in the house and thought I'd go ahead and get a piece of coffee cake, and there was a little coffee left, and Gil calls me, and it's 10 o'clock, and I'm supposed to be on the air at 6 or 7 after. I haven't turned the studio on. I haven't gotten any paperwork. I haven't done anything. I've completely lost track of time. So Gil calls me and he says, "Are you ready?" And I go, and I look at the clock and it's 10 o'clock. And I said, "No, I'm not. I'll get with you in a minute." And so I said, "Be prepared to run a bunch of commercials while I fire up the studio and get all my paperwork and everything." But I think we hit our time right. But then afterwards, the connection to my radio equipment has a transformer on it. And I look over and there's sparks and fire coming from wires that had melted and had caused, so I unplugged it, and so now I'm running on battery power, and I, through the grace of God, I think we're going to make it, because I was able to separate the wires and put a business card between them. Then I put it on the desk so I could see that if it did catch fire again, that I could just unplug it again. So that's what my day's been. Now, one other thing I want to tell you is when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about a door, a passenger door, or a car door for a truck, and every time you pull it shut, it pops. And when I get to it, there's a blob of grease the size of a grapefruit, and it still pops. And I fixed it with a hammer. So when we come back, I'll tell you why. You know, I like to talk to you about things going on in my world, and right now, when I get done, I'm going to go jump off a bale of hay, because I just have had the worst morning. But let me tell you about a really good shop. Blackwell Automotive is up in the northeast part of the community. I don't really have anybody up there in that northeast Scottsdale area except Blackwell, 40th Street and Greenway. It's not that there's not good shops up there. It's just that you have to pass a pretty rigid examination. And some of the shops haven't been in business long enough. Some of the shops don't have ASC certified technicians. So there's lots of that kind of stuff. But Blackwell can hold that area down good. He's really good at what he does. He does normal cars. He does motorhomes. He does hot rods. So if you've got an old Mustang and you want to talk to somebody about some kind of an alteration, or you've got a problem where it's blown blue smoke and only on Tuesday afternoons, then Blackwell's your guy. Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. Good guy, and I've known Tom for 25 years. I've known most of these shops for a very, very long time. Okay, speaking of my best car repair shop list, I'm not even on it. I'm not even on my own list. I'm not here to thump my chest and tell you I'm the only car in this county that can fix, or the only shop in this county that can fix your car. That's just not what this is about. This show, since 1988 in this community, is about helping you understand what you say and what you don't say, and look at all the options and lay them down for you. So if you say, if somebody says you've got the connection at the top of the tank is that's where the smoke's coming from, and the O-ring's probably bad, and that's the reason why your evaporative system's not working. And so you're taught to say, so let me get this straight. For $122, you're going to fix the problem. You're going to reset the light. Yes, thank you. And it's that light's not going to come on with the same code or anything similar to it. Yes, Mr. Salem? Yes, the answer is yes. I'm going to fix the light, and I'm going to fix the problem that caused the light. And the light's not going to come on with that code unless it's a year from now and something else fails in your evaporative system. So it's really important that this isn't a chest-thumping time for me to tell you that I'm the best tech in the town, because I'm not. What I am is I'm experienced, and I can communicate with folks and use the language you understand, because I've been in the media since, like I said, 1988. So this is what I enjoy. And by the way, I don't get paid for this either. I've been doing it all my life for free. So most important, I'm not on my own list. So if you go to MarkSalem.com and you go to Best Car Repair Shops, you're not going to find me. So I'm not the best guy in town. I'm sending you to the guys I know are very, very good. Okay, we've got a couple other things here. Is those free oil changes. I want you to know what they're doing. Here's the problem. In the 70s and the 80s and 90s, we changed oil every 3,000 miles. We got a chance at you every 3,000 miles. We could tell you windshield wipers, tire rotations, front brakes, rear brakes, oil leak concerns, air conditioning that's not right, air conditioning leaks right over here where the expansion valve, and we had all that opportunity. Today, what's different? Your oil changes, 7,500 to 15,000 miles. So all of a sudden, we don't see you as often as we can. Our business volume drops. We got technicians standing around. And it's because we don't see you with the regularity that we used to. So we have to do marketing. And we have to go through this. And we have to figure out a way to get you in. So we're going to bring you in every 3,000 miles for an oil change. Now, never mind your owner's manual says that that oil should be a synthetic. Never mind that the synthetic oil change, depending on how many quarts of oil, can be $125. Never mind all that. A conventional oil change is still $39.95, $45.95. So I can bring you in. I don't put the synthetic oil in your car. I'm going to put conventional. I'll cover you during that 3,000 miles. But I get a chance to sell you something. A tranny service. Let's flush your injectors. Let's adjust your valve. These are all high profit ideas. I profit needs. It's not that we're kicking butt and making money on them. It's just that the risk is small, the reward is fine. So we get paid, and the risk is of us messing up is pretty slim. So if I could do maintenance all my life, I would. But my fleet of cars is real heavy, and cars under warranty. So the only thing the warranty does is cover is oil changes and windshield wipers and tire rotations and brakes. So if we do a tire rotation, we look at your brakes. If you want somebody to check your brakes, ask them how much a tire rotation is. You don't want to say, I wanted you to check my brakes, because that bill might be bigger than a tire rotation. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. So, and you should have your tires rotated every other time you have your oil change. So those are the kinds of things that, but if every time you go into your shop, you get a laundry list of things to do, and you didn't give them any symptoms, you didn't say that you had a vibration in the right rear of the car, but they're going to fix one. You didn't say that you had anything leaking on your driveway or in your garage, but they're going to fix one. So those are the guys in our industry that make it kind of tough for the rest. No different than doctors. Oh, God, lawyers. How many good guys do you have to go through before you find a good one? And I'll get trouble for that, but I don't care. Actually, I work with lawyers every day, and there's some really great lawyers out there. Really great lawyers. I had one the other day that says, when you write your report, you better tell me the truth. I don't want you to blow smoke up my skirt. And I said, you don't have to worry about that. And I've worked for him before, and I know he's just doing that because he wants to wind up my underwear. But there's been many times on a legal case where I'm hired to look at this case that involves the failure of brakes. And I look at it, and I say to the lawyer, I'd rather be on the other side. I don't want to be on your side. I'd rather be on the other side. And the good ones will say, well, that's okay with us, but we want to know where our weaknesses are at. What do you see that makes you say that? And I'm okay with that. That's good business. So it really has to do with whose interest do they have first, yours or theirs? That's really what it boils down to, is yours or theirs. And like I jokingly said at the beginning of the show, if you want a free oil change and you're going to come in every 3,000 miles and I can put the cheapest oil I can in your brand new Lexus, then I'm game for that. And I'm kidding you, I'm not. So, you know, there's a lot of car work out there. And if you have a big fleet of cars, if you have a lot of families doing business with you and you got mom's car and dad's car and maybe you got the college student's car and you got his 16-year-old son's car and all that kind of stuff, I got enough business. And so do the rest of the guys. We got enough business to keep us alive. So the pandemic, I've asked some guys about that. I'm going to give you the bird's eye view. All of us took a beating the first quarter of this year. Well, actually, the last quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year. So for 6 months, we've taken a beating. There's a lot of us that are still here. To be honest with you, I don't know anybody who isn't here. So we're all okay, but there was a time where business was down 40%, and all of us were starting to think about furloughing some of the technicians or terminating some of the technicians because we don't have work for them. There's a lot of things that we were all thinking about doing because we didn't know how long this would last. But in April, for whatever reason, things blossomed for the auto repair industry. I mean, our parts houses were calling us up and asking us if they could sell us a box of air filters. It was that bad. So the idea is that we're back. Most of us are busy. And I've heard from other shops, and I'm not the center of everybody's shop. I have lots of friends in the business, as you can well imagine, and I call them and they call me. We all measure our self against one another. And there's a couple guys out there that lie through their teeth, and they tell us how they're kicking butt and making all kinds of money. Talking about spending money, somebody sent me a video the other day in an attempt to market a particular automotive product to me. There's someone on the video that says that this piece of equipment allows us to speed up the repair. And we have figured that the speeding up of the repair saves us $59,000 a year. Now, in the process of this movie that they sent to me to sell me this piece of equipment, there's this person from Phoenix, and they're the ones that are talking about this, and they flash up this mathematical equation. But you've all seen it. Before you can really read it, it's gone. But with today's technology, you push the back button and you go back and freeze it. And what it was is their average ticket price was like $196. And then somehow or another, there was this mathematical formula that says that if we can knock 20 minutes or an hour, I don't remember what the number was. It was in minutes. If we can do 60 minutes more a day in the entire shop working on cars, we're going to make $59,000 a year more. And the reason why is because it's going to be faster. I'll give you an example, a stupid example. Instead of draining your oil and standing there and wait till it's drained, this is not the truth. I'm using an example. This machine's going to go to the drain plug and suck all the oil out of the engine. Therefore, you're going to gain 3 minutes every day. And that 3 minutes at your labor rate of $150 an hour, wow, it's going to make $59,000 a year. I don't know. That's just the worst of our industry. That's just silly. First of all, there's not too many guys out there with $196 or $194 or even $190 average ticket price. There's too many oil changes out there, too many tire rotations out there. So, I don't know. You get to see what I see and you get to hear what I think. And if it's okay with you, I'll continue to dump my brain on top of you. Who's on the phone, Gil?
Say hello to Les.
Les, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
You've been talking about oil, and I just came back from the dealership. I have a Cadillac XT5 2018. Went in for normal oil, tire rotation, and so forth. No big deal. But then they said, you know, for $49 more, we could give you an oil booster. And I want to know what your opinion, aside from the upsell, is that really something that's needed?
Two things. Oh, God. This is what you say. everybody says, and forget your Cadillac teacher, you'll get the point. Everybody says that this is going to make your car better. But then on the other hand, they're going to want to do stuff that doesn't appear in your owner's manual, and this fancy-dancy special lubricant is just a profit center. It's a huge profit center, but I'm an oil expert for Valvoline and Chevron. I know how to make a quart of oil out of the base stocks and all the additives. I've done that before, and it passed the API tests. I know what oil does, and I want to tell you something. You can have 5 quarts of oil in your car, and I can dump a half a coffee cup of some special additive, and that additive will take all the rest of the oil out of specification.
2 minutes.
Are you sure you want to challenge the engine? Now, what's really funny, if you want to play games with the shop, then next time you come in and you say, hey, I got this gasoline additive, and it is just great, and everybody says this is great, so hand them something, whatever. Hand them an antifreeze container and say, this has special stuff in it. And you're going to hear them go crazy. Oh, you can't do that. Oh, you can't do that. I mean, there's nothing in the owner's manual that says that you should put this elephant pee in the tank of your car.
It is
a profit.
It was an upsell, Mark. It was an upsell, $49, and I just kind of questioned it. I said, you know, maybe next time, but not today.
Or would you show me in the owner's manual where it says that this kind of a product is appropriate for my car? Now, let me tell you, a gasoline additive that has alcohol to get the water out of your tank is valid in any car. We got a symptom, and we got a fix. But this special lotion is going to make two things. It's going to make them happy, and you're not going to know the difference. So it's just, this is the worst of our industry. This is the worst, and I'll tell you, independent guys do it too. We're constantly, people come in and go, here, this machine's going to make you a lot of money. You're going to back flush the back of their intake valves, and you're going to tell them, we're going to show you how to do it, and we're going to take this straw and put it in the liquid, and then we're going to put air pressure behind it, we're going to squirt it in the engine, and we're going to clean off the carbon. Here, look at these. Here's the picture before, and here's the picture after. Well, wait a minute. You're showing me the top of a piston, and you said that this cleans off the back of the valve. Well, why are you showing me of a picture of this over here when you're saying you're going to clean? That's our industry. So I then say, look at my owner's manual. Tell me. The other way around is they tell you that you need to flush the intake, and you tell them, show me in my manual where it says that. And, of course, it's not there. Mark at MarkSalem.com is my email. Mark with a K at MarkSalem, like the cigarette.com. I'll see you next Saturday right here.